On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about daylight saving time. Is it really as bad for you as some people say it is? Yes, they do say it's bad for you. It's not just an inconvenience. They say it's bad. We're going to talk about that one. And Don Robertson joins us to talk about outdoor games and Tom Brady and Austin Matthews and not getting any penalties. And, of course, the sad story, unfortunately, of the day, the passing of Hamilton legend Joel Holzman. If you don't know Joel, well, there were three of you who didn't know Joel, so you're one of those. Stick around. Talking about all of it coming up.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
We had daylight saving time on Sunday. A little brighter now than it would have been just on Saturday. That said, there are an awful lot of people, and this is not a new concept, but there are an awful lot of people who really believe that daylight saving time is a terrible idea and that it should be gotten rid of as quickly as possible, and not just because it's inconvenient or it's, you know, not just because it's unpleasant to lose 1 hour of sleep over the night on into Sunday morning. One of those is my next guest. Dr. Richard Cytowic is an American neurologist. He's an author. He has written about this topic and feels, I think, quite passionately about it. He joins us now. Dr. Cytowic, thank you for the time today.
Hi, Scott. Nice to be with you. Thanks for having me back.
Thrilled to have you on again. As I say, there are those who might think this is, if anything, an inconvenience, especially the time of year when we skip forward and are spring forward, so we lose an hour, which does stink. There's no question about that. Really good in the fall, not so good in the spring. But is there more to it than an inconvenience? Do you believe there is more to it than simply just a pain in the butt for one morning?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have been going around the sun for millennia, and politicians are a very recent addition. And so they don't know what they're talking about. They approach it from the point that this is good for commerce. You're going to be out playing golf and shopping and all that. But they have no concept that what this is doing to our brains, and that to change even merely 1 hour is profoundly affecting the way our brains respond to light. We don't respond to the clock. Our brains have no, they couldn't care less what the clock does. They care what the sun does and what the length of the daylight is.
So, all right, go to where you're just talking for a second, because I think an awful lot of people listening probably do think, but it is just an hour. I mean, how much damage could an hour do? Yes, we lose that hour,
Well, 1 hour has been shown to cause 19 minutes loss of sleep per night over the whole period of daylight savings time. And that so it's throwing us into a state of chronic sleep deprivation, and that can't be recovered.
I don't even understand. Why would that happen? Why would after that hour, why would we not adjust, and why would our bodies within a day or two or a week not get used to it?
Because our circadian rhythms, our brain cellular clocks, cannot change anyway. Politicians can change the clock all they want, but our brains are not going to change. They're fixed to the sunlight overhead.
There are some who have taken the opposite view, and I'm sure you've read them and listened to them, and you may disagree with them. And their argument seems to be, if we were to not have daylight saving time, as you go through the summer, the days get longer, so it becomes light into the evening, and we still have to carry on with our normal days, getting up in the morning to get to work and everything, but our bodies won't go to sleep because it's lighter, and therefore this actually helps by resetting the clock. What do you say about that?
They don't know what they're talking about. You know, the United States moved to year-round daylight saving time only one time only in 1974 during the energy crisis, and that experiment was a disaster because all the proponents realized that, oh my God, all these school children were trudging through dark, cold winter mornings. And once they realize this, the opposition becomes very clear. They don't want permanent daylight saving times anymore. You can't mess with the clock.
Was there not at some point, and I don't know if this was a Canadian thing, and I don't even know if I've heard this right, but was there not at some point, was this not something to do with saving energy, that we were trying to save electricity or help farmers or something?
That's one of the arguments, is that it saves energy because, you know, we're not turning on our lights as much. But the energy savings turns out to be a wash, because you might not be turning on your lights, but you're turning on your air conditioning much earlier. And everything and all your other appliances. So that has nothing to do with it. And the same argument that, you know, this was done for the farmers, but the farmers were the biggest protagonists against daylight savings time, because they said the cows don't know what time it is. They're following the sun, just like we do. You know, so, you know, 143 countries have tried daylight savings time, and half of them have abandoned it. So I would just say, for the proponents who think that this is a wonderful thing, do your research, because you don't know what you're talking about.
Let me go back to what happens to our bodies, because we like to say with an awful lot of things that humans are very resilient and we're adaptive, and that if you go to a higher altitude, for example, you eventually learn to deal with the altitude, or, I mean, pick whatever else. That's one example. Why would we not be able to reasonably easily adapt to this enough that it would be unimportant?
Well, it's true that humans have adapted to every niche on this planet, from the hottest to the coldest to the highest to the lowest, but we still evolved on a rotating planet that has a 24-hour period of light and dark. If you stick people in caves, their natural timeline runs to 25 hours. Their sleep-wake cycle runs to 25 hours. And so we must have our brain clock reset every day by the sunlight. And so that's why you can't mess with it.
It is. It's a fascinating one, because I know that more and more people have made the argument that you are. And, I mean, we've had politicians who
The American Academy of Sleep Medicine has, you know, and Save Standard have argued this. But again, politicians are oblivious. I guess, as I said, you know, we've circled the sun for millennia. Politicians are very recent, and they're very obtuse about understanding, not wishing to understand.
So just before we let you go, because we're short on time, what would be the, if politicians are hearing the arguments that say this is not good for us, what's the upside to them to maintaining it? Why would they want to keep it?
They come at it from an economic perspective, that this is good for business. People are going to shop more. People are going to go out and on the golf course more. They're going to be spending time outside. Sunlight is good for you, etc. And all that is irrelevant to the issue.
Dr. Richard Cytowic, I always love having you on. Thanks for the insight today on this one. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me again. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
It is time to bring in our good friend Don Robertson, the owner and operator of Dundas Real McCoys and of ComChoice Realty, and the once and future Dundas Citizen of the Year, possibly last year, maybe last year, possibly this year. I don't know. We're working on it. But he joins us now. Donald, how are you this evening?
I'm great, Scott. How are you?
I am doing fine. Thank you. Thanks for joining in. Appreciate that. What did you watch the game yesterday?
I watched a little bit of it, but we played the Hamilton Steelhawks at Great Meyer Arena in the showcase event, and did not time that well, based on the fact that there was a game at Ivor at Tim Horton Field. So yeah, we played them at 7 o'clock. So the boys and I watched a bit of it in the dressing room. Saw the interesting outcome of it. It was 2-2, and I walked in, it was 4-2, and we know how it ended. So, yeah, it looked like a lot of fun. Looks like they did a real bang-up job.
Yeah, I thought the Dundas Real McCoys will next time they have an outdoor game here, you're going to have to be the third in the lineup. Yeah, the NHL, then the OHL, then you got to get the Allen Cup team in here.
Well, that's on me. I was so busy setting up this showcase event and doing everything we had to do. I'm going, you know, I've got to get a hold of National Hockey League, and we need to be involved in this thing. And I didn't, and then the Bulldogs announced, and I got, well, I should do something, and guess what I did? Nothing. And oddly enough, they didn't call me to say, you guys should play a game too. It was suggested when I talked to Pat LaForge, actually, who put on the first Heritage Classic in Edmonton in 2003, I think, with Montreal and Edmonton. I was at it. I know who played. I forget the year. He said that the guys, is it Craig? Is that the family name that does?
Yep, Mike Craig.
Yeah,
yep.
He's from Edmonton. Well, we couldn't get a number because they'd like to have a game before that just to kind of test it out and see how things are going. But I dropped the ball. Next time we'll be there.
Well, that's good. Next time it's here, there you go. You got Don's assurances on that one. Listen, before we jump into a bunch of stuff, I wanted to, and this is certainly something, but I wanted to talk to you briefly. I don't know how well you knew this guy, but there is a guy who is a legend in the local sports community in Hamilton who passed away yesterday. And the irony of it is that he passed away almost at the moment they were dropping the puck on the outdoor game. And I mean, he has been such a part of Hamilton's sport. If you've played hockey in this community, you've probably known him. Of course, I'm talking about Joel Hulsman, who owned and ran Kineski Sports for so many years up until they shut their doors about 5 years ago. Did you know Joel well?
I didn't know him very well. Of course, I knew of him. Last time I saw him, we shot the breeze in the parking lot, the Keg in Brantford, actually. And, of course, was in the store many times to visit with them. And his former goalie, Peter Richards, was his partner. And it was actually last night, shortly after the game, when Pete Richards, who played with Ron Bernacki for the Steelhawks, sent him a text, and we sat there and kind of shook our heads. I don't know if Joel was ill or it was sudden, but it's disappointing. Pops Kineski, and he carried on that tradition as well as could be expected and was rather iconic in the local sports scene. And it's a tragic day when somebody of that age passes, which is far too soon as far as I'm concerned, since he's the same age as I am.
Well, you know, the amazing thing of what you just said there and sort of the perfect thing what you just said is you didn't know him real well, but you saw him a while back and just, you know, was talking, got going in the parking lot. That was exactly Joel. I used to wonder how he actually kept his business going half the time, because people would just walk into Kineski's with no intention of buying anything. They just came in to talk with Joel because he was the, you know, we sort of said in the obituary today, he was the mayor of Barton Street. I mean, there was nobody that Joel did not have the ability to have a conversation with. And, you know, when you described that, that was sort of perfect. You didn't have to know him. You didn't have to be his best friend, and you would have still had a conversation with him, and it probably carried on for like half an hour at least.
Oh, every time I went in, we talked about mutual friends, guys that had played pro for me, guys that had played senior. You know, we knew this guy and that guy, and it was, he had a connection to almost everybody in the city by virtue of the fact that, you know, I'm sure he knew Dave Vanderchuk. He knew everybody that was anybody in hockey and sports in Hamilton.
Yep.
And he was just a great guy to be around, and a great storyteller and a great listener, because that just added to his armor of stories that he could share. Right. So, you know,
I don't know if you saw it. I don't expect that you or anyone listening did necessarily see it today, but I'll just share one story that was shared to me. And I'd heard this one before, but I put it in the piece today, which I just thought was so hilarious. So a number of years ago, he and Pete Richards, who was his partner at the time, his business partner, and a couple other guys were just having a coffee one morning, which was sort of standard that, you know, they would get in there early, but I don't know that any business actually happened for a while, because they all, you know, it was the hot stove. And this older gentleman came in and was just looking around, and one of them said, Joel said, can I help you? And the guy goes, no, I had some friends who used to come here and shop here all the time. I thought I would, my wife is in the hospital. She's not well, and I have some time to kill. So I thought I'd come in and just take a look. And they said, oh, who was your friend or friends? And he sort of very quietly, this old man says, well, Terry Sawchuk. And they were like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Who are you? What's your name? And he goes, Ted. And then he very quietly goes, Ted Kennedy. It was Teeter Kennedy who was just in there. And they didn't realize. But, of course, they would talk to anybody. So it didn't matter that it was the guy who may have been the greatest Toronto Maple Leaf of all time or just some guy in off the street who was looking for a coffee. That was kind of their whole – that was Joel's whole thing. But they did get him to sign the wall. He had an autograph wall. And they did make sure that Teeter Kennedy signed the autograph wall before he left.
Yeah, I was going to say that was I'm sure that wall is intact somewhere.
I think I was told yesterday that the Hockey Hall of Fame has it. I don't know if that's the case, but I hope it's somewhere safe because there were so many names up on that wall, many of whom are now gone, that you'd hate to think that was lost.
Well, yeah, and all the stories about the horsehair pads. And if your pads tonight, I saw you weren't Konecny pads. They look like them.
They were DNR, but same idea. So yes, the So if people don't know, and I can't imagine anyone in the city doesn't know, but Konecny, the store that was at the corner of Victoria and Barton, until it was knocked down a few years ago to make way for a medical clinic that's never been built, is now a vacant lot. But that was where Pops Konecny invented the goalie pad, the modern goalie pad. Before then, they used cricket pads, and he sewed and made pads there. And then for years, up in the loft, that was where they were made. And that's where the wall where all the people had come and signed them. But yes, another story from there from years ago was at one point, Pops Konecny, they were made of horsehair. You would fill them with horsehair. And for some reason, his provider of horsehair, their horses, I don't know, had a balding or something, and they couldn't find, they couldn't get their supply of horsehair. So he arranged to go down a block or two down Barton to a barber shop and bought all the human hair that they could be swept up off the floor. So there were probably the owners of like 10 or 12 pairs of pads that were carrying around human hair, which, I mean, I don't suppose there's anything creepy about that, but it's kind of weird.
Well, it's not a lot more weird than horsehair, but I wonder if they worked as well.
Well, I can tell you, I didn't provide any of it. It's... It is a funny story. There's so much. I mean, that's of all the things, and I mean, look, we're going to move along, but I mean, Joel was a great guy, but of all the things that's going to be missed out of this, out of his loss, the guy had a trillion stories. Like he just had story after story. You could sit there all day and listen to him tell stories. And I even suspect that some of them were true. he was fantastic at that, and it's a huge loss for the sports community. And I'll tell you, Don, his son, I was talking to his son last night, and the number of people who have reached out who have just been, you know, hit hard by this is enormous. And I've heard from them today too. He's a guy who was pretty beloved in the city.
Well, I'll tell you, when Bernie told me, when he looked up and said Pete just texted me and told me, it was pretty silent in the coach's room for about 5 or 10 minutes, and you just start bringing back some of the memories and some of the stories. And CH did a nice little tribute to him tonight too, and he's more than worthy of this time and a lot more, I'll tell you.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Don Robertson with us as he is on Mondays from 7 till 8. And Don, you know, it is this has been a good weekend in Hamilton with the outdoor game with the Sabres and the Leafs yesterday. Not the result most of the people who were here wanted, but nonetheless, the place looked great. Hamilton got a couple hours on the international stage, and you know, people who came to the game seemed to thoroughly enjoy themselves again, despite the result. Now you've got this second game, which is, you know, I think that there's probably an awful lot of people who are here tonight who either couldn't get a ticket for the game last night or who, you know, that was an expensive ticket and this is your chance to see an outdoor game for an awful lot less money. But where are we with outdoor games? I mean, when you see there's an outdoor game, clearly for the local audience, it's a big deal. But if you're flipping around on your channel, on your TV, and forget that it's in Hamilton for a minute, if you see that there's a game in wherever, are you totally enamored and wrapped up that you have to watch that now because it's an outdoor game, or has the novelty of it worn off?
Well, I think the novelty of it is worn off. I mean, I think in Edmonton, as I've mentioned, I was at the game, and they had a game before that. The alumni played, and Gretzky and LeFleur and all those guys. So that part was really nostalgic, and it was kind of cool. And when I say cool, it was like a gazillion below zero out there.
It was crazy.
But I think the novelties wore off. I mean, I generally, if I'm near a television, will catch part of it because I want to see the visual of it. Susan and I, and her sister Patty and husband Rick all went to the Detroit Leaf game in Michigan. I don't need to go to another one. I was one of 103,000 people there, snowed the entire game. I froze everything I owned off. I think I was kind of like that cross country skier. I swear, after the game, but
people can look up what he's talking about if you don't know.
Well, you did enough on it the one night, but yeah, no, everything was pretty cold. But the deal of it, I think, on TV is a little gone because it's not the best way to present an NHL game or any game on TV. I mean, they do have. I assume there was drones yesterday running around with cameras, or how they did that, I don't know. But it's not the best TV model, but it's unique. And I think it looked pretty cool in Hamilton as well as anything. Well, that said, Hamilton the Tim Horton Field isn't as big a venue as some of the other places they've had it. You know, we had pretty decent tickets in Michigan, and we were – you know, I don't know, 2-3 miles away, and it seemed like it anyway. So you can't, I mean, there's no good seats. So that atmosphere is gone. But as far as Hamilton's concerned, and the Ticat fans won't like what I'm going to say, but I'll tell you, that outdoor game for Hamilton was a lot bigger deal than the Grey Cup because it went across North America. It looked spectacular, and they did a wonderful job on the presentation. So I think Hamilton got a lot more exposure out of that than we would have the Grey Cup. And, you know, to a great extent is because Grey Cup's only broadcast and a big deal in Canada. So I thought it was well done, and I think the shine is off of it. And I thought they did something unique by putting it in a non-NHL city this year.
See, it's clear that there is still a big deal for a local audience. When it comes to a city, that city, it's a very big deal in that city. And we saw that here. But I'm kind of with you. If they say, oh, you know, we've got an outdoor game and it's being played in wherever, Colorado, Denver, or in Montreal, or it doesn't do anything for me at this point because we've seen it. Now, there are exceptions, and the irony is the one that stands out to me, that like the very first one, the Edmonton game, was so unique. And then the next one they had, which was in Buffalo when the Penguins played wearing their powder blue uniforms for the first time in forever, and the snow was falling and Sidney Crosby was playing, that was great. And then they sort of, but was it last year or the year before when they had the one at Lake Tahoe where there were no fans basically, and it was just it was on a golf course, and the mountains were in the background, and there was the lake behind, and it was that I went, wow, that is beautiful. That looks like you're playing like a kid out, like they always talk about, you're playing outdoors like when you were a kid. The problem with that is, of course, there's no money in it for them because the 25 or 50 or 90,000 tickets aren't being sold, which is the whole point of the thing. But that to me was the one. If you could put these in a place where the images are so stirring, that can still work. But another game in another arena somewhere that's not here with fans watching, innocuous fans of, I'm not sure that does anything anymore.
Well, they ticked off a lot of boxes this year, right? I mean, they were able to have the women's gold medal team there to be part of it. And when you can do kind of special things like that, I think it really makes a difference. Now, my understanding, Scott, on these events is the National Hockey League garner the revenue and run the entire show. So what they would have likely done is compensated Buffalo for what they would have made a profit or their gross gate receipts. They will pay the Sabres what they would have grossed at their game, and then they come and sell it. And so they run the show, and it's a profit center for the National Hockey League. Even at 26,000 people, and I'm sure the tickets were more than 20, which is what the Bulldog tickets are. There's a lot of expense, but there's a lot of revenue.
Sure there is.
The sponsors are paying. And so back to my theory, watch the money. And as long as the NHL are making a lot of money on these games, plan on seeing more of them in the future, I'll tell you.
Yeah, oh, there's no question. There's no question that that's what's going to happen, and they've found something that, I mean, look, they've invested all the money now in this traveling ice-making equipment and everything else, so it's not going away. If it's local, when it was here, yeah, it was a very big deal for us. But if it's somewhere else, unless it's somewhere so stirring and stunning, and I was trying to think yesterday as I was watching, like, what could fit that bill now? And you know what came to mind, and it was so ridiculous, but I believe, if I recall correctly, that a number of years ago, the NBA played a game on an aircraft carrier. And I thought, well, that would be kind of cool. Set up the boards on an aircraft carrier and build the ice. That would, you know, I don't know how you could possibly do it. I don't know that aircraft carriers are designed for rinks. But, you know, like something that's just something really cool would be the thing. But you're right. They're not going away because they do make money. There's no question they make money.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Don, in yesterday's game, Austin Matthews got into a thing in front of the net and cross-checked a Buffalo Sabre in the neck. And today he got a two-game suspension for that, which I don't argue is warranted. It was a pretty nasty cross check. Something was certainly warranted for a play like that. But there has been a lot talked about in the last week or so, and it's not the first time this has come up, about how it is that and the two things can be separate, although they may be connected. That Austin Matthews, who is arguably the best player in the league, a top three player in the league, has the puck on his stick a lot. The Leafs are a possession team. How Austin Matthews, I think the total is that he has drawn a grand total of 6 penalties this season. And he's somewhere like 325th in the league in drawn penalties. How does that happen? How can a guy who, I mean, you were an official. If you're big enough and strong enough and you don't fall down easily, even though you're being impeded, do you just not get calls, or is he not ever having anything done? Like, how do you look at that and come to those numbers and say the guy who has the puck that much and is that involved never gets calls for him? How does that happen?
Well, he might be a bit of a whiner and a bit of a baby on the ice, and if he's yapping all the time at the referees, that's one answer. Because human nature will let people say, yeah, he kind of deserves that, whatever he gets. I don't know if he's that kind of a player or not. I don't know what his temperament is out there. I don't know how he treats the officials. There's one answer. The other one is big, strong guys play through hooks. You know, if you try and hook Mitch Marner and you put the same hook on Austin Matthews, he didn't even slow down. So it's kind of hard to judge them in the same effect. He's a big man, and he's as strong as a bull. So it's going to take some reefing to hurt him, and that, in actual fact, might be part of it. He's fast, so he's hard to get some lumber on. That might be a factor. I don't think it's being ignored, but he does take his share of abuse, and I would think a combination yesterday of getting abused in front of the net like he was and getting kind of hammered again, not hammered, but beaten by what some would think the lowly Sabres, that he just got really annoyed, as I choose my words carefully, and said, that's enough. And it was a pretty vicious cross-check. Two games and
no question. I mean, it's not even just Auston Matthews. I mean, there are some guys that draw a ton of penalties, and there are other guys that don't draw any penalties. And for a long time, Connor McDavid was getting no penalties called against him, which was, to me, even more amazing than Auston Matthews, because McDavid is faster than everybody else on the ice, and he would blow by guys and they would put out their stick. And for whatever reason, now more recently, he's starting to get some calls, and whether it's because that has been brought to the referee's attention or whatever, but it just, there are some guys that just draw penalties. Well, and to your point though, go ahead. Well, no, I was going to say that if you're one of the guys, it would seem that it's a conundrum, because if you're one of the guys who's drawing all these penalties, surely you must be going down more easily. And if you're going down more easily, surely the referees are then saying that guy goes down easily, which would mean he's not going to draw the penalties, and yet he still does. Like it seems like it doesn't, the pattern shouldn't make sense.
Well, some of it too is like bunting on his line draws an inordinate amount of penalties. Like he just seems to be one of those guys that gets high stick. And that speaks to where they play the game and how they play the game. Like Bunting's going to the net. He's in front of the net. You're subject to more abuse. Where did Matthews run into trouble yesterday? He was in front of the net. But Auston Matthews, the way he shoots, he can, with his speed and his edges, he can play the perimeter and score a ton of goals and be very effective. If he spent more time in front of the net, he'd draw more penalties. But that, to him, is probably boring and probably not where the team wants him, because he can score from almost anywhere. Bunting, on the other hand, gets abused and gets knocked down and gets his feet kicked out from underneath him. And I'll bet if you look at Bunting, he's probably drawing four or five times more penalties than Auston Matthews. Does that make any sense? No, unless you think about where he goes to play the game.
Don, just really quickly, story. I don't know if it was funny or what the word you would use to describe it, but the story that Tom Brady ended his retirement apparently after 22 days. I'm not going to ask you if you're surprised, because we don't, neither of us know Tom Brady, but does it surprise you that a guy who was still obviously playing at the top of his game would not want to leave? You've been around enough guys. That was the part that I didn't expect when he announced his retirement in the first place, that he could still play the game. I was surprised that he wanted to walk away at that point.
Yeah, you never know what was going on. It'd be really hard to believe that he went through all his money in 21 days.
Well, Giselle makes more than him, so he really had to have been spending.
Yes. So I don't know. I mean, that I think I've talked to a lot of athletes, and I know you have as well, that retiring is a really hard thing to do. And waking up every day going, you know what, I'm not done. You know, I've been at it.
I can still do this.
Right. And when you talk to guys that are retired, I mean, I tell that guys, to guys all the time, they're going to play for the Real McCoys. I said, boys, you're a long time retired. When you quit, you can't get those games back. So if you want to play, play. Now, none of my guys are making what Tom Brady makes, but it's the same impact, right? So I'm sure he said to guys, guys have said to him, you know, you can still play. Like, you're retired forever. And maybe that got to him. Maybe he said, you know what, I can still do this. Because you're right, he's still a very gifted quarterback at his age, or at any age.
Well, and the NFL, the irony of this is that the NFL has so many teams that need a good quarterback. Now, he's going back to Tampa Bay, but, I mean, if he was a free agent, Aaron Rodgers just signed for $50 million a year, which is, I mean, that's just ridiculous. But nonetheless, that's a whole other discussion for another day. But, you know, there's a team out there. If Aaron Rodgers is getting 4 years at $50 million, there would be a team that needs him that would pay Tom Brady that for a year or two. And I mean, he could have easily pocketed $100 million more. Now he's going back with his old deal and apparently and stuff, but anyway, Anyway, there's I was sort of surprised, but sort of not when he came back, because I didn't really know why he left in the first place. But there you go. Don Robertson, we are out of time this evening. Thank you for doing this, as always.
Enjoy the Bulldog game. It was fun. Thanks, Scott.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.